This chapter was taken from the Food and Feelings Workbook, written by Karen R. Koenig. Chapter 9, Disappointment. Disappointment. If I use my scale as a shield, I won't feel a thing. Disappointment arises when your needs, wishes, or expectations don't get met. You hope for one thing and end up with another, or with less than you want it. Disappointments can be large, such as being passed over for a promotion or being left at the altar, or small, as when you can't find those slinky navy sandals in your size. Surprisingly, it's not always major disappointments that knock the wind out of you. Seemingly trivial letdowns can feel crushing too. You might be disappointed by life in general, by other people, or by yourself, or by all three. Maybe you hope to become a ballerina, earn a PhD, live in the mountains, get married, have children, or retire at 40. All of us have dreams throughout our lives, and feeling badly when some of them don't come true is normal. But how could it be otherwise when life is a mixed space, big of intentional action and pure dumb luck? One particularly painful kind of disappointment is when you believe you let yourself down. This experience is familiar to people with eating problems because they often have unreasonable expectations of themselves. Examples include trying to be superwoman or man by taking care of everyone, never saying no to requests for help, attempting to be or appear perfect, or trying to overcome an eating disorder on your own and refusing to seek help. The truth is, when you ask more of yourself than is realistically possible, you're bound to fail. How do I know if I'm feeling disappointed? Getting your hopes up and having them dashed is the ultimate emotional bad landing. When you're disappointed, you experience a sinking feeling, a literal letdown, as if the elevator carrying your heart is hurtling toward the basement, or as if one minute you're coasting along on a spirited breeze of yes, and suddenly you crash headlong into a concrete wall of no. Disappointment not only deflates you, but also reminds you of how high you could have flown. Other strong feelings often accompany disappointment, like sadness, confusion, helplessness, resentment, envy, bitterness, despair, and the shame of being a loser. When the feeling descends upon you, you may want to cry, punch a wall, sink into sleep, or curl up and die. Stop and feel. What are your disappointments around food, eating, weight, and your body? Practice exercise. Identifying letdowns. Purpose: to recognize how you are disappointed by life, other people, and yourself. Rationale: it's so easy to slough off disappointment that we often don't recognize how it colors our life. This exercise will help you identify the locus of your disappointment so that you can start to address it. Directions: have a mini brainstorming session and fill in the columns below with as many examples as you can think of in each category. Life, other people, and myself. When you're done, you may have disappointment spread evenly across all three columns or find that one has significantly more than the other two. Reflection, to be done after completion of exercise. Were you surprised by what causes most of your disappointment? If it's from the general unfairness of life, what do you have to do to get more of what you want? If it's due to other people, could you make some personnel changes? If you're not living up to your own ideals and aspirations, are you not trying hard enough? Are you expecting too much of yourself? What is the purpose of disappointment? Although disappointment feels awful, it can provide you with a wealth of valuable information about yourself and your world. Once again, its purpose is to keep you moving toward what's beneficial and away from what's going to come back and bite you. It's meant to teach you how to make realistic, well-informed choices by recognizing the delicate balance between what you have power over and what you don't. Examining disappointment with an open mind will help you to distinguish between being foolhardily childish or demanding and courageous, generous and willing to take appropriate risks. In short, it's there to help you get the good things you deserve. Disappointment will also help you identify who in your life is reliable, dependable, and there for you, and who isn't. It will help you separate what people say, "You know I'd do anything for you," from what they do, which may fall short of their promises. Lastly, it shines a spotlight on your desires so that you can determine which of them will lead to fulfillment and which will lead to heartache. Ironically, some people use disappointment to reinforce how little they deserve in life and how they shouldn't get their hopes up. I hear it all the time. Something fails to work out for a client and they remind me, "See, nothing good ever happens to me. I've got a black cloud hanging over my head." But try as I might, I fail to see a cloud, black or otherwise. Instead, I see someone with irrational, self-destructive, negative thinking who's stuck in old wounds, suffered too much disappointment already, and has mistaken their history for their future. Attending to their disappointment could teach them how to heal their hurt, develop a more positive perspective, and move on. Recognizing and acknowledging what's in your control and what isn't can help shape your expectations and choices. It can put your feelings into perspective when things don't work out as planned and you're licking your wounds. We'd all like to rule the universe, but the wise among us adapt to their own limitations and accept the arbitrariness, unfairness, and unpredictability of life. Stop and feel. What do you feel disappointed about right now? Why does disappointment hurt so badly? Disappointment packs a wall up whether it catches you by surprise or you're waiting for it to happen. It hurts in order to get your attention. You may even make it worse by convincing yourself that if you're always vigilant and in control, bad things won't happen to you. In this way, you con yourself into believing that things have to work out and experience a double whammy when they don't. When you walk around with your hands covering your eyes, you're bound to be shocked if you stumble into a brick wall. You also deepen disappointment when you insist that everything doesn't work out is your fault, especially when you use it as affirmation of your worthlessness and a reminder that you're doomed to have unfulfilled dreams and unmet needs. Add to that your self-contempt for feeling like a loser, and you end up sinking lower and lower. Can you see how you compound the hurt with your unhealthy and untrue view of yourself? Wouldn't it be better to take appropriate responsibility when things don't work out, rather than adding to your disappointment by beating yourself up? How did I learn about disappointment? As with the other strong emotions, the way you experience and react to disappointment has its roots in childhood. If you've been raised by parents who were reliable and predictable, coped fairly well with setbacks, cushioned your letdowns, generally kept their promises, helped put your upset into perspective, and treated you respectfully and fairly, you probably manage pretty well when things don't go your way. You know that disappointment is distressing, but not necessarily overwhelming or intolerable, but you can bear it by marshaling your inner resources and getting support from others, and that it's an inevitable and universal, but only an occasional condition. However, if your parents coped poorly with disappointment, you had ineffective role models and no one to teach you how to handle setbacks and failures. When things didn't go their way, maybe your dad drank or your mom took to her bed depressed, or they yelled and screamed and blamed you or each other. If so, you might have gotten the idea that life should always go smoothly and your way, and that anger and blame are appropriate responses when things go wrong. If your folks constantly complained about their circumstances, behaved like perpetual victims, were bitter and resentful, gave up easily, or never got their hopes up, you probably acquired a great many negative messages. If you were blamed frequently for your parents' setbacks and for situations you couldn't control, you may assume that everything bad that happened to you or them was your fault. Believing you had power was your way of trying to minimize your pain. After all, the illusion that you can do better next time and make things come out right is far more tolerable than feeling helpless and despairing. If your parents never took risks in fear of being disappointed, you may think it's so unbearable that you're scared to have aspirations or expectations. You just float along through life, taking whatever comes, the good with the bad, pretending you're happy. If you were faced with overwhelming and/or repeated disappointment while growing up, you have good reason to think that you're a magnet for it. Your experience attests to the fact, or at least that's your perception. Lowering your expectations was a healthy, adaptive mechanism for survival. However, and this is a biggie, that was then and this is now. You're older, wiser, more experienced, and your life circumstances are different. You have more control, more power, and many more choices today. You may also have difficulty tolerating disappointment if you were overprotected as a child by well-meaning parents who regularly minimize your failures to prevent you from feeling hurt and upset. Maybe they rushed in with excuses and inappropriate, excessive comfort, or tried too hard to neutralize your pain so that you never learned that disappointment is normal and natural. You may have gotten the message that you weren't capable of dealing with intense emotions. No wonder that now, as an adult, you feel incompetent, inadequate, and insecure. You may not believe that you'll ever be able to reprogram your unhealthy lessons about disappointment, but you will. The first step is to thoroughly examine your beliefs and be honest about how you view not getting what you want. The next step is to decide what healthy, rational beliefs you need and start visualizing yourself acting on them. And the third is to catch yourself when you're in the throes of disappointment and talk yourself into managing it better. Think of it this way. Every time you fail to live up to the way you'd like to handle disappointment, you get another chance at that. Stop and feel. What are you feeling about how your parents modeled and or taught you how to handle disappointment? Practice exercise. Stories of disappointment. Purpose, to identify childhood memories of disappointment. Rationale, in order to understand how you view and react to disappointment today, you have to return to the past. It may be painful calling up times when you or your family were let down, but the payoff will be increased understanding of your difficulty with emotion today. What you need, your voice. Directions. First, speak aloud a story of disappointment. Major, if possible, that one or both of your parents had to face when you were growing up. For example, losing a job, illness, divorce. Focus on their reaction and how it impacted you. Next, tell a story about a disappointment you suffered, especially if you can still feel its sting today. For example, not making a sports team, promises your parents didn't keep. Focus on how you handled the letdown back then and how it still affects you. If you're in the mood, keep telling stories until you run out of disappointments. Reflection, to be done after exercise. Could you make an emotional connection to past situations, or are you cut off from the pain of childhood disappointments? Is there a thread that runs through your stories? Do you handle disappointment the way your parents did, or purposely do the exact opposite when you're heartbroken? Do you see yourself as a victim, or generally empowered? Beliefs about disappointment. Because rational thinking leads to rational behavior, it's essential that you build a belief system that's sound and healthy. Here are examples of irrational thoughts turned into rational ones. Irrational belief. I can't bear feeling disappointment. Rational. I can bear feeling disappointment and any other feelings. Irrational. If I did things right, I would never be disappointment. Rational, everyone is disappointed sometimes. Irrational, if I choose the right people in my life, I wouldn't be disappointed. Rational, it's natural and expected that people will disappoint me occasionally. Irrational, nothing ever goes right in my life. Rational, I have things in my life that go well and things that don't. Irrational, I have a black cloud hanging over my head and will never be happy. Rational. I can make choices that make me happy. No one is preordained to be happy or unhappy throughout life. Irrational. If I weren't so needy, I wouldn't be disappointed so much. Rational. Everyone has legitimate needs. Irrational. I have to get what I want right away or I'll be upset. Rational. I cannot get what I want and still feel okay. Now it's your turn to transform your irrational beliefs into sound, functional ones. Take your time and make sure each new rational belief feels right for you. They should be concrete and written in the present tense using an active verb. Feel free to use the list above, but make sure you come up with some of your own as well. If I weren't so needy, would I be disappointed less? If you're frequently disappointed, you might assume it's because you're asking for more than you deserve, or that you have needs, physical, emotional, intellectual, sexual, or spiritual, that are too numerous, inappropriate, oversized, or burdensome. Worse, you may believe that you shouldn't have needs at all. You're right that you'd never be disappointed if you didn't have any, but we all do, whether they're called wants, wishes, expectations, hopes, yearnings, dreams, or desires. In any case, it's not necessarily true that having fewer needs would lessen your disappointment. The subject is far more complicated than that. Here's why. Sometimes, without realizing it, you may act in ways that hinder your needs from being met and leads you to feeling disappointed. For example, say you make plans for a movie with a friend who has a rotten track record of reliability, a bad habit of canceling dates, or not showing up at all. There you are outside the theater waiting for 25 minutes when she hurries over, breathless and brimming with excuse. Of course, you're upset because the show has sold out and the movie's already started. In this situation, knowing about your friend's chronic unreliability, you've put yourself in a situation that upped your odds of being disappointed. Setting yourself up in this way is the kind of voluntary suffering discussed in Chapter 7. Here are other examples of voluntary disappointment. You expect your parents to love and respect you even though they never have. Go on the same fad diet over and over and expect to keep the weight off. Trust your friend with a secret although he's a blabbermouth. Are desperate to squeeze into a size 2 when your tall, strong, athletic body is a perfect size 8. Or say yes to a night out drinking with coworkers even though you almost always return home drunk and depressed. What all these scenarios have in common is that you're wearing rose-colored glasses and not looking clearly at your part in producing a negative reality. You may unconsciously set yourself up for disappointment and feeling too needy if you have a false sense of entitlement, unrealistic expectations, or engage in magical thinking. Entitlement comes from behaving as if you deserve more than the next gal or guy and should receive rewards without having to earn them. Signs include frequently demanding special treatment, putting yourself above the rules, insisting that every whim be gratified and gratified now, and making requests that are way out of the ordinary. Unrealistic expectations are just that. They simply aren't going to happen. Matt Damon is not going to suddenly appear on your doorstep, and you won't be attending Harvard with your D-plus average. Magical thinking describes a blatant refusal to see reality because the truth hurts too much, and fantasizing feels more comfortable, secure, and hopeful. Magical thinking is in play when you and your fiancé fight all the time, but you anticipate a loving marriage, or when you continue to hang out with friends who support your practice of bulimia but still think you can stop on your own. If you believe you're getting more than your share of disappointment and that many of your important wants and wishes frequently go unmet, now is a good time to look squarely at what you are asking of yourself, others, and life. You can start by making sure that your expectations are rational and realistic, and that they can be met effectively. If you have questions about your appropriateness, check them out with a close friend or a professional. If you tend to feel entitled, you can work on developing patience and humility, which go a long way toward making people want to respond to your valid needs. If you incline toward magical thinking, try to understand your attachment to denial and your fears about facing the cold, hard truth. Changing your thinking is hard work, so you might want to seek out a therapist to help you identify irrational thoughts and develop a rational belief system. Two things need to happen if you want less disappointment in your life. You have to make sure your desires and expectations are rational, realistic, and appropriate, and that you're not sabotaging yourself unconsciously. You also have to surround yourself with people who wholeheartedly want the best for you, which means they're willing to take your needs seriously and make a reasonable attempt to meet them. If you don't have this kind of healthy support, make time to consider why and how to get it. This may mean reducing contact with other people who don't have your best interests at heart, as well as making new friends who do. A tall order? To be sure. But just think how great it will feel to get what you want and deserve out of life. Stop and feel. How do you feel about the quality and quantity of your needs? Practice exercise. Courting disappointment. Purpose? To understand how you set yourself up for disappointment. Rationale. You can avoid some letdowns by figuring out what you do unconsciously to invite them and by changing your expectations, actions, and reactions. Directions. Consider times when you've been disappointed during the last week or month. As you come up with examples, list them in the appropriate column based on their cause. Voluntary disappointments, feeling entitled, unrealistic expectations, or magical thinking. Don't stop until you can easily identify if you have a hand in your disappointment. Reflection. Being honest with yourself is hard, isn't it? What did you learn about your disappointments? Do you have more of a hand in them than you thought? Try to understand what's behind your unhealthy patterns of placing yourself in situations or in engaging in behavior that's bound to hurt you. How does feeling disappointed drive me to focus on food and weight? If you're like many disordered eaters, you lack faith in your ability to console yourself when you're in the throes of disappointment and/or feel awkward or feel fearful of burdening other people with your troubles. Instead of turning to friends for comfort or a new perspective, you look to various food behaviors to distract you, pick you up, or set your world right. You prefer to tough it out alone, ashamed that you might have been the cause of things not working out because you believe that if you've only tried harder, then they would have. Or you lift your spirits by getting psyched for another diet or reading over your food journal to reassure yourself how little you ate for the day. If you're someone who eats when things don't work out, food may actually seem like a good friend. It never turns a cold shoulder, says it's too busy, ignores, laughs, or yells at you. Plus, when you're eating, you feel safe, comforted, fulfilled, and maybe even happy. Food seems a perfect counterweight to the deflation of disappointment. But down the line, usually after the last swallow, you realize your mistake, and back comes the sinking feeling in spades. Now you're facing whatever brought you down in the first place and unhappiness with yourself for being conned into thinking that food would make you feel better. Or you've replaced an unfamiliar, scary disappointment, whatever bummed you out, with an old familiar one, your lack of control around food. If you're a restrictive eater, disappointment might send you into a tailspin that the only way you know to stop spinning is to grab hold of something, and that something usually relates to food and your body. You may not be the master of your universe, but you can exert control where you think it really matters by not eating, rigidly restricting your food intake, refusing to go to dinner with friends, or jumping onto the scale to feel proud about how little you weigh. The rest of your life may bring you down, but at least you don't have to disappoint yourself by gaining weight. The fact is, though, that when you fixate on food to cushion disappointment, you're not really taking away the regret, but adding to it. Now you feel badly for your destructive behavior and the fact that you couldn't face your feelings. You've created a vicious cycle because more acting out with food will only bring more disappointment in yourself. There are two effective ways to break this cycle. You can sit with your feelings and try to soothe yourself and let it pass, which builds inner resources and makes you stronger emotionally. Or you can turn to someone else for comfort and cheering up, which builds external resources through deeper connections. Although these behaviors can feel risky, they're bound to increase your self-pride. Plus, by learning to depend on yourself and others, you'll be moving toward facing disappointment head-on. Then, even though you may struggle with the feeling itself, you'll feel better about how you've handled it. Further exploration. Question 1. How do you know when you're disappointed? 2. What is the purpose of disappointment? 3. If you suffered a great deal of involuntary disappointment as a child, how does this experience contribute to your difficulties today? 4. What is the worst thing about feeling disappointed? 5. How did your parents handle their own disappointment, and what did you learn from them about this feeling? 6. How did your parents handle your disappointment? 7. How do you set yourself up for disappointment? 8. What are your secondary feelings about feeling disappointed? 9. Which of your expectations most often lead to your feeling disappointment? For example, needing to succeed, be liked, or be perfect. 10. How does focusing on food or weight help when you're disappointed? 11. How could you handle disappointment more effectively? That concludes this chapter. Thank you again for listening.